Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My name is Kathy Tu. I co-host WNYC's Nancy, and this is OPP.
Pod bless everybody, and welcome to another episode of OPP. Other People's Podcasts is America's number one podcast discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is Kathy Tu, host of WNYC's hit show, Nancy. Kathy Tu, along with her co-host Tobin Lowe, tell provocative stories and have frank conversations about the LGBTQ community. In this interview, I stopped by WNYC Studios to chat with Kathy about her upbringing in LA, how she landed at WNYC, and of course, we get into her dope show, Nancy. So, allow me to introduce you to Kathy Tu. Wow. Kathy Tu, what'd it do?
Things are good. I think we're in production, you know, in the ideas phase, which is like, how do we describe it recently? It's kind of like the pit of hell.
And you're just explain
like,
that.
You're just like waiting in hell, you know, being like, is there any idea here that'll bring me out of hell?
Yeah.
Cool. We'll just go back to swimming.
It's nice being here at WNYC. Y'all got some nice digs in here.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's great. It's great. They try their best.
you even got the apparel on.
Yeah. This is my work sweatshirt.
Oh,
it
I dig it.
It keeps me warm because it can get real cold in the offices.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles. Well, like the burbs of Los Angeles.
Yo, I have a lot of love for LA.
Yeah.
I've been really pondering making a move out there.
I think everybody has.
Yes.
I'm always thinking about it.
Yeah, it's taking me a couple of times to really get adjusted. I think Uber really helped like New Yorkers adjust to like LA life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, yo, I guess just still get the Uber skirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I read somewhere that like now they're saying LA is one of the cities where you don't need a car. And I'm like, what?
No.
When did that happen?
No, I have friends that are there with no car.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think the car, not having the car in LA too, kind of helps like democratize the situation. Like one thing I like about New York City is that, yo, it doesn't really matter what kind of car you drive. You can't judge me based on my car.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Maybe my shoes, but not the car. You know what I mean? Like your shoes in New York is your car. That's your Lamborghini.
Wow. Okay. Well, now I feel self-conscious about my shoes.
No, not at all. But I mean, shoes always say something about you.
Dude, I guess I've never noticed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I love, well, because I grew up in LA, I try to wear sandals as much as possible.
Oh,
so I'm not even
shoes. Right. Maybe it's like a regional thing.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But I do know that, I'm going to stereotype now.
Yeah, don't
guys,
do it.
Guys tend to love like their sneakers.
Totally.
And I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
And so I can see that. I can see that happen.
Yeah. I feel like that's like our it's our way of, it's like our purse. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like, oh, wow, he has on the new J's? Ooh. Wow. Like, what are those, the OBJ's? Oh, those are $200. Oh, those are limited, the Travis Scott's? Ooh.
I can get into that. I am obsessed with backpacks. It's a very specific thing that I feel like just me and maybe like 100 other people in the world are really into.
But that's also a regional thing, too. In New York, your backpack is a thing because you need a backpack.
I mean, yes, but I also started this like a while ago.
What's your favorite brand?
I can't name my favorite brand. There's too many.
What was your high school brand? Like, what was the backpack you went to?
Okay, high school, I wasn't as into it yet because, you know, didn't actually have any money then.
Yeah.
It was like a classic JanSport, you know?
Oh, JanSport was
the
business.
That's fine.
With the suede
that's
bottom?
Fine. Yeah, exactly. Different colors. That was fine. But then, like, I went to college and suddenly I was like, oh, I don't have to use like a school backpack anymore.
Oh, yeah. Wait,
so
what'd you graduate to?
So like what the kind of backpacks that I'm really into are backpacks that are like sleek and small,
okay,
but not dainty.
Okay.
And preferably multi-use. So if I needed to go to work, if I needed to go to the gym later, if I needed to go hiking one weekend, if I can just use one backpack for that, great. That doesn't exist yet. Okay. I'm still looking for it. But I spend way too much money on backpacks.
Yeah, what is like the backpack like cost? Like what are like the high levels and what are kind of like the medium levels?
I don't think I can say because I will feel bad. To be fair though, I can't drink, so I save a lot of money on alcohol that I then funnel into this backpack addiction. I have like a trunk, like a wooden trunk at home that's just backpacks that I like kind of rotate through and decide which one I'm going to use for this season of my life.
Has not drinking adjusted? How has not drinking changed your life or made your life?
Oh, I've never really been able to drink, so I don't know. It's just a thing that I haven't been able to do ever.
Explain that in further context of like why.
Oh, I think I don't think I'm allergic to alcohol because I think when you're allergic, you like go to the hospital. It's really bad. Yeah. I think I'm just highly intolerant and it makes me feel really bad and nauseous and I will throw up. And so I just don't drink because I don't want to feel bad.
Well, my boy Arnold, he's Korean.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that he has like an Asian glow or.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's like an allergy to alcohol that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
makes
very
him
common.
Feel. Like really, really bad.
It's probably that, just a little bit more intense. And I know that like it's possible if you drink enough consistently, you can probably like wear that whatever that is down, and then I could be like a normal drinker.
So if you drink more,
if I drink more, I probably could get to a point where I could just drink socially. But like trying to get from there from where I am to there just seems like a lot of throwing up and I just don't kind of
want
to do that.
No, I don't want that for you.
So I think my brother has the same thing, but he got rid of it in college, so he didn't have to worry about it.
Where'd you go to school?
UCLA.
Yeah, what was it like at UCLA?
It was great. I love UCLA. I still love UCLA. Big fan of the football team. That sucks.
Oh,
but
yeah,
recently, we did win one game.
Wait, who'd you win against?
Washington State.
Okay. All right.
They were ranked 19.
Right.
I don't know
they're
what they are
formidable.
Now.
They're kind of formidable.
Yeah. And we won by coming back from, it was 49-17 in the third quarter or something like that. And we came back and we won it by like 3 or 4 points.
Hell
I think.
Yeah. Rocking out.
Yeah. It's like the only sport I watch now.
What was it like growing up in LA and then going to school in LA?
Well, I grew up in Diamond Bar, which is like a suburb of L.A. It's very close, right on the border between L.A. County and Orange County.
Okay.
It's also a very Asian community. It's also a wealthy community in that, like, there's this gated portion of Diamond Bar that just has million-dollar homes. I was not part of the gated portion, unfortunately. That would have been real cool.
Fortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But maybe if I was in the gated portion, I could have been friends with Snoop Dogg's mom, who was a resident.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe unfortunately. In that case, since you put it that way.
Yeah. And I think Snoop Dogg's son or sons, I don't know. I think they went to my high school after I graduated.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I think the school was like 40 or 50% Asian. I would say mostly Korean. And so I always felt like most of my friends were Asian. Like it was like it felt segregated. It felt like it was like the 50% of us were Asian, like stuck together. And then everybody else sort of also stuck together. And then unless you were like popular enough or in student government, there wasn't that much mixing that I recall seeing. Maybe there was and I just didn't see it. But yeah, that's what I felt like high school was like. In Diamond Bar. And then I went to UCLA for college. And I feel like it was definitely more integrated in a way. But I think that was the time when I was like, oh, I'm Chinese. Like, it was like a time for me to be proud of the fact that I was Asian. So I got really into all these different, like, Asian clubs. Like, I was part of the Association for Chinese Americans. I did like lion dancing, and then I was doing taiko, which is like a Japanese drumming art. And so by the time I graduated from college, I was like, all of my friends are still Asian, except for my coworkers.
What was it like in high school being a part of, you know, obviously I'm a black man, you're an Asian woman, being, everywhere I go, typically I'm the minority in a space.
Yeah.
I've never been, I've had very few situations in life where I was a part of, my culture was the majority.
Uh-huh.
So what was it like being a part of, in high school, having 50% of the school being Asian?
It felt just like very normal. I mean, like, because I've been there since we've been in Devonbar since I was in third grade, I want to say.
Yeah.
So it was just always so normal. In fact, if anything, I think part of me felt like I was like more Korean because most of my friends were Korean.
Okay.
So it just, I don't know, it just was, it was like a normal fact of life. Like, it's not like we went out and like hung out with people who were not Asian. It was just school and home, friend's house. So like my life was just full of Asian people all the time.
Was it adjustment going to UCLA and having that not be the reality?
Surprisingly, no, because UCLA is also very Asian.
Really?
Yeah. Not as, I feel like not as Asian as UC Irvine. I think Irvine has a larger population of Asian students, but UCLA also has like a good portion. I think that's why when I got there, it was like, I remember in high school, there wasn't, you know, as much like Asian pride, like be proud of ethnic Chinese and get involved in these clubs. At UCLA, there were a lot of Asian students there, and they were proud of the fact that they were Asian, and that's why these clubs all existed, to like get to know each other and learn about things and try different arts and stuff like that. And so I was super into that because I was like, this is the thing I'm a part of.
Yeah.
Like off the bat. So it actually wasn't until I went to law school a few years after I graduated, and that was in Boston, was the first time I felt like in a school setting I was in the minority. And I was like, well, this is interesting.
Yeah.
I've never felt this way before.
Was it adjustment at all?
Yeah, I would think so. I think it was. I don't think it was like, I don't think it was a difficult adjustment, but it definitely, I definitely felt like I was explaining things a little bit more.
Yeah.
There were fewer people who like celebrated the same things I did every year. Like Chinese New Year is a big thing, and it happens across a lot of Asian cultures. And so we all kind of like know that's the time. And I remember being in law school, it was less that. And also at the same time, I was feeling like I needed to expand my horizons in terms of friends and like the type of friends I kept around me. So even though in law school there was also like a Asian Pacific Islander group, I was like, I'm not going to do the same thing I did in college where I only surrounded myself with people I was comfortable with. And instead, I really tried to embrace like these little, there was like a, my law school is broken down into like a bunch of different little groups. And I really tried to hang out with people in my group because I don't know if they tried to break it down so that there was like a diverse group of people in one little group.
Yeah.
But it just happened that my group was that way. So I tried to hang out with them as much as I could. And as a result of that, I had like lasting friendships, because also law school, so it's like going, sometimes it feels like it's going to war together. But in the end, I felt like even though I was in a place that where I wasn't used to being, you know, I hadn't been my entire life being used to being the minority, I felt like I had such good friends around me that it didn't matter in the end.
Oh, was law your focus at UCLA?
No. Oh my God. I focused on so many things at UCLA.
Yeah. What was your major there?
Which one? Let's see. I went to UCLA as a laughable math major.
Okay.
Because math was easy for me in high school. I was very good at high school math. And then, like, college math was, like, more variables than numbers, and I was like, I can't do this. So I was, like, a math major. I was an econ major. I was an international econ major. By the end, I was international development, which just basically studied, like, developing countries and how they've moved through time and, you know, what they're facing in the future, that sort of thing. And then I was, like, think I was a political science minor and a classical civilizations
minor.
I really like school.
Wow.
It's a thing I know how to do.
You know what I really admire about you? You have a diversity in your intelligence.
I appreciate that.
Like, I feel like I'm intelligent in like three things.
That's not true.
Sneakers, podcasting, and like, I don't know, sports. That's kind of it. Or music.
What's your team? What are your teams?
So New York Knicks basketball.
Okay. Okay.
My football team, I'm kind of right now trying to figure it out.
Like I feel that way too.
Yeah,
you know?
I grew up with the team in Washington, but I cannot say their name because it's racist and it drives me
nuts. Oh, that's tough.
And I feel ashamed.
That's tough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to be ashamed of my team. I mean, they're losers too, on top of that. So not only are you a loser, but you feel like a loser after every game. Like,
yeah.
You got blown out on Monday Night Football against the Bears the other night. But
Oof.
Then also it offends people. And I'm like, I just don't know. So football, I'm kind of going through the motions and trying to figure it out. And I like the Yankees.
The Yankees. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Obviously you have, are you a Dodgers fan?
I am a Dodgers fan.
Okay.
I'm a Dodgers fan, but I am a Anaheim Ducks fan.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think I lived closer to Anaheim than I did to Staples Center.
Yeah.
So definitely a Ducks fan. Also love the movies. I can't decide. I don't like basketball enough to really have a team.
Knicks. Just say the Knicks.
Okay, but I feel like you can't just do that.
Why?
Right? Because like, if I say that, then people are going to be like, you're not truly a Knicks fan if you haven't been a fan for like...
Trust me, the Knicks need fans.
Oh. Yeah, what's the reputation of the Knicks?
Garbaggio. Absolutely terrible. They're so trash. It's like, it's unbelievable. The only thing that keeps me loyal and keeps me so into the team is, number one, like I was doing research today, that they're the only... there's two teams in the NBA that have never left their founding city. And New York is one, and the Celtics is the other.
Okay.
Every other team started somewhere else and then moved.
Yeah.
So we have a very loyal, rich tradition, and I like that. And I also love, there's nothing like going to the Garden. There's nothing like catching a basketball game at the Garden. It just feels like this is where basketball was meant to be played. You know?
Okay.
So it keeps me in.
The Knicks, the word is short for Knickerbocker,
Knickerbockers,
right?
Yeah.
I learned recently that that means like the people.
Ooh, does it really?
No. Is that not true?
Oh, I mean, I don't know.
It's IKEA. Yeah.
I have no clue.
Kathy,
we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to get into your podcast. Nancy.
Sure.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And yeah, we back. No, hold on. Like Kathy, we were talking about you were studying law.
Law, yeah.
How did you get into media?
Oh, man. Let's see. I graduated from law school in 2013. And already by like the last quarter, I was kind of like, I don't think I'm going to do this, which is hilarious because for the first like 3 years, anytime any one of my classmates was like, I don't think I'm going to do law. I think I have to quit. I was like, no, we're in it together.
Fight through, persevere.
Exactly. And then by the end, I was like, I'm not going to do this. And then I graduated and I applied to this program called Transom, which is basically like a radio or a podcasting boot camp in Cape Cod.
Okay.
It's very expensive. But if you can afford it, it's a great education. I don't think that like nowadays with all the resources out there, it's absolutely necessary. But if you have the opportunity to go and that's something you want to do, especially it was great for me because I can do school. So I was like, I'm going to go learn how to do something like this. So I did that because I was like, I'm going to apply to this program. If they accept me, I'm going to do it. If not, I think I'm going to turn my life to like the technology world, because that's something I've always been interested in. I'm still interested in, and I just don't know when I'm going to turn my life again in that direction. But they accepted me. I went. I met Tobin, my co-host Tobin Lowe.
Okay.
We were in the same class. We were the only non-white people in the class and the only people who are also queer. So clearly we were like going to be best friends or mortal enemies. Luckily, it worked out in our favor.
I say so.
And then after Transom, I went back home. I went to L.A., took and failed the bar exam. And then I just started freelancing as a technical producer. I worked on other people's shows. I took like their scripts and their audio and I made the show in Pro Tools for them. And then we would just go through rounds of edits and that sort of thing. So I really enjoyed doing that. That was fun. I really liked it. At the same time, Tobin went to New York. He was working at Marketplace. And he had this idea for this show. Basically, he called it like a queer This American Life.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds cool. I can work on it with you, like just in our own time. But I was definitely following his lead. And he'd been talking about it. And then at one point, WNYC, our home station, put out this contest called the WNYC's Podcast Accelerator. And we decided that we were going to use that contest as a way for us to get our thoughts down on paper because we hadn't made any moves. Okay. It's hard to work on a thing in your spare time when you have a full-time job. I think most people know that. It's difficult. But since I was a freelancer, I had a flexible schedule. Tobin was working like the early shift at Marketplace. So he was kind of done around 1 or 2 p.m. every day. And so the two of us just started working on the show. We put our thoughts down on paper. We submitted. We were one of the finalists. And then we had to go to L.A. and do like a live pitch of our show in front of a panel of judges, including Glenn Washington. And then we were one of the winners.
Wow.
Surprising both of us. And once we won, we went through like, I can't remember how long, like 9 month or a year long process where, again, still working our respective jobs, we started putting together this episode or the show, like a first couple of episodes of what we think the show could sound like. We had to produce a pilot to show the execs here so that they can green light or kill the project.
Okay.
And then we put together, I believe, two episodes. The first episode was... ended up being our first episode of the show with like my coming out story of coming out again to my mom. And our second episode, I believe, was an interview with Lena Waithe, who wasn't as big as she is now, but she was always so great about helping other like producers of color get things out there. Like she said yes, like immediately. One of our first like guest bookings, which was just so amazing. Wow. And we've talked to her a couple of times since then, and she's always been so gracious about giving us her time. She's just a great person all around. And we submitted those two episodes to WNYC, and then they greenlit the show, and we've been making it ever since.
Where did Nancy come from, the name of the show?
The name of the show used to be called Gaydio because Tobin loves puns.
Yeah, I see that.
And unfortunately, we believe it was it's a show that exists in the UK, or it's like a internet radio station or something called Gaydio.
Okay.
And also, we got the feedback that we didn't want to. It doesn't make sense to default to the word gay when we say we're going to cover the whole queer community. So we went through iterations of even more puns and other horrible names. But at one point, Tobin just got like super frustrated. And he's like, you know what? Let's just name it after a person. And I was like, okay, sure. What person? And he said that Nancy would be a good name because it used to be a slur for a gay man, like, back in the day.
Okay.
I think maybe mostly in the UK. I'm not actually sure. But he explains this better than I do. But basically, his thought was, if you knew what Nancy meant, then you'll probably know what our show is about. And if you don't, it's just a weird show that's named after a person.
Right. So it's like not as on the nose.
Exactly.
But if you know, you know.
Yes.
Got it.
Exactly.
Got it.
So we went with that. Our EP at the time, Paula Schumann, loved it. And so we just went with Nancy.
And, you know, you pitched the show while you were living in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So by being accepted by WNYC, you mean that you had to make the move to New York?
I did not. I put it in my contract that I was living in LA. We actually, like, I think we pitched to them the idea that we were going to be, like, long-distance best friends. And that they just have to, like, at some point I just have to go into the studio to New York every once in a while to also make the show. Like, the good thing about making podcasts is that, you know, you don't need to film yourself doing anything. So for the most part, as long as you have access to good internet connection, you have, like, good equipment, you can make the show from kind of anywhere.
Yeah.
And so, like, at the moment, Tobin's living in L.A. He moved to L.A. over the summer. And now I live in New York, which is, like, a whole weird thing that Tobin made happen. He would disagree with that. But we're totally fine making the show because we talk every day. We send things back and forth. It works great. It's been working great ever since I was in LA and he was living in New York. It's great.
What's it like? I always say with podcasting, it's an amazing way to rebrand yourself.
Mm.
And to kind of become an influencer in a space.
Because yeah.
for some reason, when you talk on a microphone about a particular topic, you become an expert in the topic. And everyone thinks of you as an expert in the topic.
Yeah.
But what has it been like becoming a voice of the queer community?
I mean, it's a few different things. It's exciting. It's terrifying. It's also very humbling. Just because, like, you think about all the people out there with so much knowledge, and I'm the one that has to say something into a mic.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. I think I'm leaning more into it. I used to be very, very against being like a public person or like a personality. But nowadays, I feel a little bit more comfortable in that role, mainly just from practice. And having talked to the people who listen to the show. Like, in my world, if I were to just, like, shut myself in, my imagining what our listener base is saying is always more negative than what people are actually saying.
Yeah.
And so the more I talk to the people who listen to the show, the more I'm like, oh, like, our show is really helping people connect with their family and friends and just themselves even, that I feel good about doing what I'm doing. I guess I still don't feel comfortable being, like, an actual personality, because that's like a Jessica Williams, you know? That's like a comedian with, like, training. Mm-hmm. And I still don't feel that. And I also don't sometimes feel like a I went to J school type of reporter either. So I feel kind of, like, a little bit in the middle between being, like, a very like, sophisticated comedian,
yeah,
and a very schooled journalist and reporter. And sometimes I feel like I'm great at doing both, and sometimes, most of the time, I feel like I'm just somewhere stuck in the middle.
Yeah. How's podcasting change your life?
It has 100% changed my life. I am now, like, way more into queer culture than I was before. I think before I was sort of the camp of people that's sort of like, I'm just like everybody else. Like, I'm a queer person, yes, but I am like everybody else. And I think that's totally fine. But I've since realized that, like, I am actually more comfortable and more happy being immersed in a culture where there's, like, some mutual understanding between, like, a group of people. Sometimes I feel like it's not unlike being an Asian person and hanging out with, like, your Asian friends. Having a queer space where you're not explaining what it is that you're talking about to other people just is comforting in a way that I didn't know that I wanted in my life. And now I seek out those spaces whenever I can. And it's kind of sad that those spaces are sort of, like, shrinking and shrinking. Yeah. But I think it's the people of this generation, the next generation after us, who will continue to keep these spaces open for queer folks, as long as, you know, people aren't stomping them away.
Yeah.
Which I feel like sometimes we're close to doing.
Yeah. Okay, Kathy, we're at a point in the show called our podcaster's picks.
Great.
And this is where, first of all, I adore you because you sent me the email. You were like, is there anything to be prepared for? And I'm like, yo, you're so professional.
Oh, always be producing.
Gotta make that into a t-shirt. Well, we're here at our Podcasters Picks where I asked the guests of today's show to give me three podcasts that you love and that we should be listening to and describe it.
Okay, 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 okay. I love talking about other people's podcasts, so.
OPP.
OPP, yes. Okay, my very first one is, I love, 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 love Reply All.
Love Reply All.
Love
it. I came on to that late. I came on to that, like, literally, like, 2 months ago.
Listen to the one about the guy in the photograph. That's okay. All I'm going to say.
Okay, okay, okay.
So that's the first one. Second one is Death, Sex, and Money, a WNYC show about death, sex, and money. It's hosted by Anna Sale, who is also like one of the loveliest people in the entire world. I don't know that she knows this, but I see her as like a hosting mentor, and I tend to call her when I'm very emotional, being like, I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, here's the plan. And I'm like, great.
But she's just the coach. She just draws up the play.
Yeah. She is just such a good interviewer. I feel like I listen to the show. I intend to listen to the show to like pick up tips on how to interview people and how to do a better interview. And I end up just getting sucked in. I forget why I was even listening to it in the first place. But I just love it.
And what makes a good interviewer to you?
She's so, well, I think that her voice lends like a layer of empathy that is hard to communicate with words. I think the timbre of her voice is helpful in that world.
Wow, I want someone to say something nice about me like that. That was so same. Good. That was good. It's like, wow, that touched me.
Yeah, and I think because of that, she's able to ask the questions that might be difficult to ask, but doesn't come like. You know how, like, sometimes you'll ask a question because you know you have to ask it, and then you're just, like, you cringe like, because,
sorry.
Like, yeah. She never needs to sound like that. She is just, like, very honest and open. And, like, if there's a way to say blunt without, like, the bluntness of the word blunt.
Yeah. Blanc.
Yeah. That's what she sounds
Le
like.
Blanc.
Yeah, yeah. She can ask the questions. It's like, well, though I do use Anna's show sort of as, like, a... like, when I was in the dating world, I'd be like, do you listen to Death, Sex, and Money? And then if you do you like it? Because if you don't, then there's nothing more to say here.
Right, right. It was like the gauge.
Exactly.
It was the gauge for date two.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what's your third pick?
Okay, third pick. I was deciding between two.
Okay.
So I might, like, do a half and half.
Do a half and half.
Okay.
Remix it.
I will say I love Ear Hustle.
Have
you heard?
Come on.
Love Nigel, love Erlon. I think New York is doing a great job as the next
solid.
Host. It's just such a good show. Like I don't know what else to say.
it's podcast perfection.
Yeah. And then when they announced that Erlon was going to keep working on the show after he got out of prison,
yes.
I was like, oh, I think I'm going to cry.
Yes. I love that show. What's your other one?
The other one is I love 30 for 30. I love a sports show.
Yes.
And that's done so well. Especially recently, that series about Bikram was good. Yeah. But I also watch their documentaries, and I really enjoy those, too.
Kathy, we're here at the end of the show.
Uh-huh.
We've come to the end of the road.
Fine.
Which is so sad. I feel like I've really made a friend today. It's really amazing.
Obviously, we're going to keep in touch.
It's like, yo, text me later.
Yeah.
But, you know, I end the show with this question.
Uh-huh.
Why do you podcast?
I guess it would be not okay to say because Tobin made me do it.
That works too.
I podcast because here's the thing that I said to my therapist back in law school. I'm scared to be creative, but I feel like if I can just find the right medium, then I can be creative. And I think when podcasting came along, I was like, oh my God, I think this might be my medium. And I think it's the only place where I felt comfortable enough to be creative and take creative risks. It's also the place where I'm like, ah, creativity, what are you? But it's been the only place I felt safe enough to be creatively like risky or just to be creative, which I think is something that every person can nurture a little bit of in their life.
Kathy, it's such an honor to have you on the show. And thank you so much for welcoming me to WNYC Studios to do this interview.
Thank
it's you. So cool.
Come back.
Yeah, I hope so.
Come
this
hang
so,
out.
This is so awesome. I really appreciate you. I love Nancy. I love what you do. And I love what you do in the space. And I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Corey.
God bless. We out. Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of OPP and to our special guest, Kathy Tu. Be sure to check out her dope podcast, Nancy, and I'll provide the links to that in the description of this episode. This episode was mixed by Bradley Naaman. Music for this episode was produced by Richie Quake. And lastly, be sure to check out my other show, Silent Giants, which highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. And I'll be sure to provide the links for that in the description of this episode. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. God bless y'all. Till next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.